We want to warn listeners ahead of time that a racially offensive word is used in this recording in a description of an incident. We decided to include it for purposes of keeping our journalism authentic. This is Melanie Eversley, guest editor of the Craftsmanship Quarterly issue focused on Black artisans. In putting together the piece on the evolution of vegan soul food, we were compelled by the story of one Black restaurant owner in an unlikely part of the country.
Hi, I'm Terry Collins, contributor for the Black Artisans issue for Craftsmanship Quarterly and a journalist based in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Hi, I'm Shakima Smalls, also a contributor for the Black Artisans issue for Craftsmanship Quarterly. I'm a writer based in South Carolina.
And we're with Mae Gaines, the owner of Vegan Soul, a Black-owned vegan restaurant in, of all places, Boise, Idaho. So not only has Mae's restaurant become one of the more popular eateries in the entire state, Vegan Soul has also been recognized by the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, also known as PETA, as one of the top five vegan soul food restaurants in the United States. Mae attributes the accolade to a strong work ethic and her ingenuity. So, how'd you get into Vegan Soul?
I started Vegan Soul when I myself went vegan about a couple of years now, I think. And there was no vegan restaurants here. There was nothing vegan to eat. If you went out, you were out of luck. Places had said they had vegan, but they probably would be like salad or fries or something. But I wanted something that was more comfort food, like home style. And there was nothing like that here. So I decided I wanted to start my own restaurant. And in January of last year, I did. I went forward with it. And it's been a blessing for me.
Mae, that's amazing, especially considering where you're located. What would you say about the reception that the community has to, you know, your vegan fare and your style and your vision?
I didn't know how large the vegan crowd was here until I actually started my business. But overall, since I started, like when I put up my Instagram, people started joining like immediately, especially on my Facebook as well. You know, when I just started mentioning that I was going to be opening, people were anticipating it. And I come to find out there's like so many people here, tons and tons, right? Like thousands of vegans here. So yeah, the crowd's pretty big now. I was really, people were really welcoming to me. And so were businesses too. When I started registering my business and things like that, when I go to places like the health department and places like that, they were very open. They was like, we're excited to have you. So that made me feel really good. I knew I was on the right path then.
Right, definitely. And to cultivate community, a unique community at that, I'm pretty sure that felt very welcoming to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was really excited, too, for people to have soul food. There's a soul food lady that's here. She's not vegan, but they didn't have anything like that for vegans. So I thought I had a good position by offering something, you know, that nobody was doing. So I think I changed people's perception. And I think even still, I'm still doing that, you know.
So, Mae, you said you're succeeding in this untapped market because of your cuisine's unknown quality. And also that you're in a college town with curious students and faculty, you know, from all across the country. And, you know, you've also said that you've made these these great and intriguing from scratch soul food items with your vegan twist. Said it's been trial and error. And tell us a little bit about like your Caribbean jerk jack, which is made from some unique offering.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really had started to miss when I went vegan was Jamaican food. That was something I ate like regularly, like almost every week I had Jamaican food. So when I went vegan, that was what I missed the most. But not really just the meat that I miss, the Jamaican meat. Well, I guess the oxtails, you know, you think about oxtails. But jerk chicken, I love jerk chicken. And so I just decided, I was like, I can make jerk jackfruit and just use the same flavors. And so so I started experimenting with the, you know, the Jamaican flavors and started adding them to different types of, you know, like jackfruit. I used...
What's jackfruit? Explain what jackfruit is.
Jackfruit is actually a fruit, and you can eat it at different stages of its growth. If it's really young, like when it's young on the tree, you could
eat it then. And you could tear it apart and soak it and brine it and use it as a meat. Or you could wait till it's fully grown and you can have it as a fruit. It's fully fruit, but it's really sweet. And you can even use it for dishes you want when it's sweet as well. But overall, most people will get it when it's young. And it's the texture is kind of like pulled pork. And so people kind of shred it up and dice it up and things like that. So, but there's so much stuff you can do with it. Like people put it in, make mock ribs with it because it can give it a texture of the meat. When you mix it with gluten flour. But I like to fry it up really hard, really crispy, kind of a burnt type of flavor because it gives me the texture of if you were making it jerk, like real jerk style, when you put it on the grill. So I kind of fry it up that way with all the Jamaican spices. And it just, it comes out so delicious. Like the flavor is just amazing. And so I make a jerk jackfruit sandwich where I jerk the jackfruit that way, put a lot of spice on it, and I put a seasoning, a sauce on it afterwards. Even after I fry it, I put another sauce on it. And it's just like, oh, just thinking about it. But it's been one of my best sellers. People who like spicy stuff and they miss that flavor, a full flavor of Jamaican food, they love that sandwich.
Mm-hmm. And like with your fried fish, the main ingredient for that is?
Yeah, the banana blossoms. Banana blossoms, people are like, what is that? You know, it's they look similar to artichokes. When you fry them up, the texture of it comes out like fish. And I add kelp or seaweed powder, and it gives it the flavor of the fish. You can add as much as you want if you want it to be really fishy. And if you don't, you just lighten it up. Or you cannot even use it at all. Sometimes I don't even put the kelp. I just use the batter that I would for fish, either cornmeal or a flour type batter. I actually prefer the beer batter method. But overall, the banana blossoms are really, really popular. A lot of people are discovering that. And that, to me, that's what vegan food is about. It's about discovering all of these. It's just a whole long list of vegetables and fruits that you're able to experiment with that people just don't. We get so used to just like this pyramid of right. like vegetables and fruits that we're all used to, like corn and mm-hmm. and green beans, and like there's so many fruits and vegetables mm-hmm. That come from so many different parts of the world that we don't even, you know, we never even touch.
Well, you know, May, online, you've written that vegan culture is change. It's healing, it's helping, it's including. So would you say that there are existing societal assumptions or deterrents to plant-based eating and lifestyles that you find yourself having to address through education? And what kinds of things might those be? Because it sounds like people have a lot of options just based on some of your own favorite recipes. And taking that back to African-American culture, we see that it's accessible. We just need to have that knowledge. So what do you find yourself coming up with in conversation in terms of educating people about the vegan lifestyle?
Some people just they refuse to get rid of meat. They say that they can't live without meat. And to me, that's where the challenge comes in. Those diehards that say they'll never mm-hmm. get rid of meat, you know, they have to have it. And it's just changing that perception by offering them things that they never thought would be delicious. Because if you tell people that, you know, it's made with mushrooms, they'll say, I hate mushrooms. I would never eat mushrooms. You know, so you have to kind of be tricky with it and trick their taste buds. So, you know, with buffalo cauliflower, it looks like buffalo wings. And a lot of times just because of the eye, people go for it until they taste them. And then you're like, no, mm-hmm. those are not buffalo wings. and they're never really upset about it. They're really always stunned that they're eating something they thought they never liked. People right. think that, you know, they have to, you know, it has to have meat in it. But it's that's not where the flavor comes from. Even meat is nasty when you just don't have anything on it. So you're adding all this stuff onto meat. Like, I don't know anyone who eats meat and don't put some kind of seasoning on it. No one's eating meat just plain, you know? So
now, May, can you tell us a bit about your background and how you came to Boise and to settle in Boise?
I came to Boise with my daughter, who was getting her second bachelor's here. And I followed her out when she came to check into her dorm. And when she came here, I was just so floored at how cheap it was and how pretty it was here. You know, you think about Boise and you think about Idaho, you think like us all farmy and, you know, farm town with not, you know, I don't know, our expectations of these places sometimes will be way off from what it actually is, you know. But it was really beautiful. It reminded me of Woodland Hills, where I came from.
California.
Woodland Hills, Calabasas area, California, right.
And of course, yeah. Obviously, you know, Boise, university town, one of the more, I guess, progressive, somewhat places, so to speak,
right.
in the state and in the region. But of course, you obviously stand out because Boise is a city with only a 2% Black African population, according to recent U.S. Census figures.
Yeah, not that many of us out here.
Right. How do you adapt to that? Going from a place where it's a state that's hugely diverse to somewhere where you're only among a few.
Well, you know, if you're Black, you understand that you're going to experience racism everywhere, even in California. You know, I experienced racism. And then I lived in Woodland Hills in Calabasas area anyway. You know, I was in that area for over 25 years. So the area when I first moved out there wasn't a lot of us out there. And if you were, you were like a celebrity. So so I was always, you know, the only chocolate in the box out there too. So I was used to that. I've always been used to that. You know, being the only Black person in the room, you know. So it really wasn't no difference for me in that regard as far as adjusting. Since I've been here, like even within the first year, you could see it just multiplying, more Black people coming here. I have seen some people come here and some people that were already here who are leaving or have left. It seems very inclusive as far as like gay couples there are a lot of gay couples here. And it seems really welcoming in that regard, but there's still a lot of challenges here. You know, just within the last year, it's just the racial tension here is just a lot different. And even still, I'm still used to that. Like I said, you know, I've had my experiences in California, even when I had moved to Bakersfield at one point. Bakersfield was really, I would say Bakersfield was one of the scariest places I've lived. So being here, some people say they're leaving because it seems very welcoming, but on the tail end, you can feel it's just a different feel here, you know. It's just a different feel. It's just a totally different feel.
How's that? Because, you know, from the last, when we first talked, just, you know, a few weeks ago, before everything, we were into talking about, you know, a new presidential administration coming in. And now we're talking again, we've seen this uprising in D.C. with the Capitol riot. And how has that projected to where you are? That impact what happened in D.C., affecting you and in Boise?
It's like I said, you can see the tensions are a little high here. They're just, for example, a lady that I know was not too long ago, somebody followed her like for miles just to tell her, call her a nigger. And that to me was really shocking. You know, that in this time, people are still chasing us down and calling us that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just the tensions are really high and it's, you know, and you see people working really diligent, being really diligent about trying to make other cultures comfortable here. That's a mission that you can actually see. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cultural events here. There's a lot of that kind of thing going on here. It's almost like they're fighting against something that's unseen, you know, it's like people, white people know that they have friends here that are not friendly to Black people. And I have friends who even talk, white friends who talk about that, who say that they have to check their friends, their white family members or their white, you know, coworkers or whatever. You know, and people don't realize that they have this bias. Some people don't even know that it's there. And that's another issue. You know, that's something that me and my daughter talk about, even her with some of the jobs that she's had since she's been here, and how people say things and they don't realize that they actually are a little, you know, they're a little racist, mm-hmm. you know? So it's a constant educating people, you know? Mm-hmm. And some people are really happy about that. Some people are happy and welcome to learn those things. But some people are just, they're like, I don't want to deal with that. Some people don't even want to talk about it. So for example, with the George Floyd thing, no one wanted to talk about that. That was something people didn't want to talk about here. But we now with the thing that just happened at the Capitol, people want to talk about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But people didn't understand why we were mad about George Floyd here. They like, why are they doing this? Why are they out here, you know, taking up this space? So whenever we would have events out here for George Floyd, it became a thing to where we had to be quiet about it. We had to hold off the date and not tell other people until that day, because then these people would show up and they would come from other states like Washington and Oregon, and they would come out and try to counteract us. You know, they'd be on the other side trying to protest against us protesting. You know, it's a fine line. So now actually that still happens here. Groups that we have here that are working towards you know, stopping racism and things like that. When we have events, we have to be quiet about it. We keep it amongst ourselves. We email each other, and then we don't tell it, you know, where it's going to be and what time it's going to be until that day, just so that we don't have, because even some people say here, some people have had events and they say they don't even want to tell the police department. And mm-hmm. and that's made things funny for me, because I have to make sure that I have to check the health department when I'm going to be there. If they want to have me there, I have to make sure that I'm okay to be there. Mm-hmm. And that I actually have done that, and it's caused a problem where they were calling immediately. Yeah. And so I have to not even say anything. If I'm going to be there, I have to be there vegan soul, completely separate, because otherwise I'm putting too much light on the event that they didn't want. And sometimes they say the police department is, you know, sometimes there's people on the police department that are not really as friendly, you know, mm-hmm. to those events.
Yeah, how have you navigated that? That's unique. So this is more so intensified within a matter of months.
Mm-hmm. It has, yes. It's heavy. It's heavy. It's a heavy deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really tense. It's different. It's much different.
Well, given that professionally and also with the pandemic, do you see that your cuisine has helped kind of like bridge some things between the communities?
I think so. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because there are people here from a lot of people here from the South, and people don't miss the Southern, you know, the Southern heat down there too, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. you know, cause there's racial tension down in the South still, you know, and a lot of people have left because of that. So some people don't miss that, but they miss the food. And how that brings people together. And so so my food gives people that sense of that portion of the South, that Southern hospitality that brings people together. That's what my food kind of gives them that feeling of. And that makes me feel good when people tell me that they remember those times when, you know, they would go and get soul food and, you know, when they were growing up and how, you know, how they had this mix of friends and how they all would eat together. And that my food reminds them of that. I think that is a wonderful thing. And I think my food does, it kind of brings that together. Yeah.
I definitely just wanted to, you know, thank you again for sharing a lot of your recipes. Because I know, and you know, our culture in general, a lot of people like to hold their recipes close to the chest. But like you said, you know, we try to build these, you know, these communities and these gatherings where people are brought together and we learn new things about the way that we eat. We learn new ways to express our culture, which I think is important.
Right, right. I totally agree with you. To me, music, food is similar to music. Mm-hmm. How it brings people together. To me, I feel like food is the same way. They bring people together.
Right, for sure. You mentioned earlier that there were some transplants from the South. And you know, I'm in the South. I'm in South Carolina. In terms of the transplants from the southern regions of the U.S., are they predominantly Black of all races? What's some of the pull that they would have to a place like Boise, Idaho?
They're not all Black. Actually, I was surprised by that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of white Southerners here. They're people that come from Alabama, Louisiana, North Carolina, shoots, Atlanta, you know, Georgia. There's all of those regions. Those people are here. And it's interesting. Right. You hear all these different stories of what brought people here, you know, and the school Boise State is one of the focal points of that brings people here. And also, oddly, relationships bring people here. There's a lot of stories of people saying they came here because of somebody they were in love with.
Oh, wow.
And they come here and they their relationships don't last, but their love for Idaho stays. So I think that's so interesting. You know, I find that to be so, so interesting. People, you know, because, you know, when people come from a relationship and their relationship breaks off, they're ready to leave. You know, they're like, I'm going to go back home. But no, people want to stay here. And I find that to be that means that there's something really special about Idaho in that regard. You know, it's a beautiful place here. But just like all over the nation, we are having to wean out this this hate that's just looming, you know. And it's not just Idaho, it's all over the nation. Mm-hmm. So I think once that's gone and that's pushed down, the beauty of these places can be brought out, you know, and people can understand why people like myself are still here, you know. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wanted to ask you real quick about, you mentioned about expanding. Can you talk a little bit more about expanding your business?
So what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to, because we're in the era of meal prepping and dishes that you could have mailed to you. So I'm actually working on frozen foods. I would love to.
Wow.
Well, my goal is to really, I really believe that soul food should be, I'm not soul food, but vegan food should be as accessible as fast food. That's mm-hmm. That is my dream, to have a lot of places for not just soul food, but vegan food in itself. It should be everywhere. So I'm working on my first two things will be the my macaroni and cheese and my yams. So I'm actually already experimenting with that right now. I'm on different ways of reheating them and keeping them frozen. So, but I think that that's the wave of the future, having a lot of vegan food that you can get in the store. Already done, like we do, like all the other stuff that we've eaten over the years, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so when it comes to expanding, I'm just trying to keep my options open in different directions. I do want to have a place here in Boise as well as in California, Atlanta, you know. There's a lot of places I want vegan soul to be. And so I actually also, my dream was always to be on Shark Tank. So I'm working on just creating food that can just wow people. So when they eat it, they're like, wait a minute, you know. I think that I really believe that the vegan food should be everywhere, whether you're buying it frozen in the frozen section or whether you're driving down the street. Like, there should be 15 vegan souls as well as there's McDonald's, you know. Mm-hmm. I think these companies are on their way out. I really do. It's changing.
So May, tell us where we can find you.
I am on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I am on Instagram. I am on Twitter. And I'm new on TikTok, which I'm still trying to figure out. But I'm on all of those platforms as O Vegan Soul. That's O-H Vegan Soul. Mm-hmm. And you can find me there and you can join me on any of those platforms. And I'll be glad to. You can always inbox me about some ideas that you're thinking about cooking, your favorite dish. I always ask people what is their favorite dish that they were eating when they were not mm-hmm. vegan. Because I would like to give them options so they can learn how to make things, you know, in an alternate way, you know, even if it's not just for them, but for their families as well. Mm-hmm. Because vegan food is about transforming. It's about transitioning people, mm-hmm. you know. So you might be the only one in the house who's eating vegan. But next year you might, you know, now it's three of you guys eating vegan, you know. Even for myself, I went vegan first and nobody in my family was vegan. And now my daughter is vegan. So it's an adjustment, you know, it's a lifestyle, it's a practice life, you know, mm-hmm. just like we had to learn how to cook foods that we all grew up on. This is the same thing with veganism. It's a practice lifestyle. So it's about, you know, changing people's opinions about it. So sometimes every year you might be the only one until people eating that meal that you made, you didn't say anything, you know, they didn't know it was a vegan dish mm-hmm. and they loved it. And it's the first thing that's gone, you know, that's usually what's happening to families all over the place, is that they're bringing that one dish, you know, so that one dish is usually macaroni. Macaroni and cheese is the first one, you know, people love that cheese, you know, and that's the last thing that that's the last thing for people to get rid of when they're going vegan, is the cheese. Mm-hmm. So the macaroni and cheese dishes, to me, they have to be on point and they have to be good enough to change people's minds. So it takes some time, but yeah. So follow me. If you follow me, I'll be glad to share some recipes with you. I'm starting to learn how to share recipes, like videos and things like that. It's a practice life too.
Yeah.
But I love sharing, and that's my thing. I love to convert people. So I say, ask me about your favorite dish that you've loved, and that, you know, your recipe that you want to convert, and let's try and switch it over and see how it comes out, you know.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, May, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
For your success with Vegan Soul. Good luck with everything.
And thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Course.
We really appreciate your time and your story. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And for Shakima Smalls, I'm Terry Collins. Thank you so much for listening to us on behalf of Craftsmanship Quarterly. Thank you. See you next time.
This podcast was hosted by contributors Terry Collins, a journalist in Oakland, California, and Shakima Smalls, a journalist in Georgetown, South Carolina. Vegan chef May Gaines of Boise, Idaho, was the guest. The story tied to this podcast originally appeared in Craftsmanship Quarterly, a multimedia online magazine about artisans, innovators, and the architecture of excellence. More stories, videos, audio recordings, and resources on craftsmanship can be found at craftsmanship.net.
This week on the Craftsmanship Quarterly podcast, we talk with Mae Gaines, owner of the award-winning restaurant Vegan Soul, situated in, of all places, Boise, Idaho. Amidst the racial tension of the past year, her food has often been a bridge for communities and connection.
Because vegan food is about transforming, it's about transitioning people. Food is similar to music, how it brings people together. To me, I feel like food is the same way.
Check it out now at craftsmanshipquarterly.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
And you think about Idaho, you think like us all farmy and, you know, I don't know, our expectations of these places sometimes will be way off from what it actually is, you know. It's a beautiful place here.